This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Ah, here we go. LT, do you smell champagne in here? Like leftover champagne?
Did we pop it last night?
Did you pop it last night?
We did.
How about
I
that?
I think I would have popped that in the first inning.
Yeah, that thing got a little hairy there, Lance. I don't know if you stuck with it after the first inning. I was checking flights and hotel rooms, and that was about as scary a three-run lead as you could have.
You, the national fan on the show, Ryan Brown, who adopted a baseball team the day one of the Nationals from their first game at RFK Stadium. He jumped on the Walgreen logo, and they are now, for the first time ever, in the World Series.
Yep.
And I saw last night that leaves only one franchise never to make it.
I didn't realize it was down to two. They brought that up in the ninth inning.
Would it be the Mariners?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Mariners.
Washington was one and Mariners the other one. Well, I guess that says a lot about baseball because you've got more NFL franchises than that that have never been to a Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, a lot more.
Oh, yeah. Hello, Cleveland.
Yeah, and I would assume
but
more.
The World Series have been going on a lot longer than the Super Bowl.
It has, and I assume more NBA teams that have ever been to a finals.
Oh, my.
I mean, it seems like there's a lot of those. I didn't stop to count. But anyway, no, it was a great night, Dunaway. Seven runs in the first. You thought it was over, and I'll give St. Louis credit. They didn't pack their bags after the first. But, boy, that first inning was fun to watch.
Here's Ryan Zimmerman, Rockstar cut number 18. He is the guy that has been there since day one with the Washington Nationals. He's 20 years old when he became a National back in the first year at RFK Stadium. Here's his thoughts right after the win.
I still talk to season ticket holders now that have been here since RFK, and you know we went through those things together right around 2012 when we made that first push. Things started to change a little bit, and the expectations were raised, and you know we've had some chances and couldn't come through, and I think a lot of those failures kind of taught us and pushed us to get to where we are now. So, you know, I feel like me, the fans, the community are kind of one, and, you know, they deserve this just as much as we do.
Now, in all honesty, and you just said something like this before the show started, Brown, I will say this, and I want you guys to react to it. This is what is great about sports, is because this Nationals team, as I sit here today, I would not trade their roster for the Dodgers roster, and I wouldn't trade their roster for the Braves roster, but they're the National League champs. This sort of came out of nowhere.
It did. You know, there were a lot of years, I was telling Dunaway before you got in here, Lance, there were a lot of years where I would sit through June and July and August watching this Nationals team thinking, okay, this is the one. I mean, yeah, look, I know they've sucked in the postseason, but this is the team I think that can get over that hump. Especially Bryce Harper's MVP season. I mean, when he was having a season like that, where not only is he hitting the home runs, he's over 300, you've got the good pitching. I sat there and watched this team this year, and they are so flawed the whole season. The bullpen's been awful the whole season, and it was terrific in the postseason.
Well, you know, that's what's so amazing is you have really, at least statistically, the worst bullpen in Major League Baseball.
I know.
And there's only two guys offensively in Rendon and Soto that scare people.
I know. I watched it all year, man.
And, I mean, there's so many different layers to this. And this is what's so frustrating about sports. As awesome as it can be, and Brown can have a team that has as many losses on June 1st, is the Detroit Tigers, who went on to lose, I think, 117 games this year. And now they're in the World Series. But I go back to the last couple of years and being a Dodger fan, and they haven't won a championship since 88, which is forever ago, especially with that payroll. It's just the baseball season is a long season, and you just don't know when you're ever going to get back there, if you're ever going to get back
there. I know. I mean, it is this is probably the most dominant pitching performance I've ever seen in a postseason series, what the Nationals did to the Cardinals. And I guess that just shows you used to see this with the Braves, how they were a really average offensive team, and they would get in the postseason, and they didn't have to be that great offensively because their pitching was so good.
I just don't understand how the Cardinals can go four games this deep in the postseason and hit 130.
Isn't that crazy?
I mean, really good starting pitching first with the Nationals.
Exceptional starting pitching.
Yeah, but exceptional starting pitching, would we be holding them to, what, 230, 240?
Yeah. I mean, they have one inning in the entire series.
Yeah, let's not forget, statistically, this was the greatest season of offensive production in baseball history.
Yeah, it makes no sense. I mean, you can't explain away. I mean, Goldschmidt was horrendously bad.
1-19.
Howie Kendrick's your MVP, a guy that right before he turns it around In the wild card game, you were ready to pack off on your phone. He has become the hero of the postseason, and luckily you are not the general manager with the instant eject button.
No, I wanted to trade him to the Redskins.
Yeah.
He was, he was really bad. Lance will attest to this. He watched all the games. He was bad in the Dodgers series until that grand slam. I mean, he made three big errors. He was doing nothing at the plate. And he hit that grand slam, and all of a sudden, he's a different guy.
Oh, I got a text the night he hit the grand slam early in the game from a fellow Dodger fan saying, we need to gift basket Howie Kendrick.
I know. He was awful in that series until the end of game five. And then he was phenomenal in the NLCS. It's just that's postseason baseball, I guess, that right? Is. I mean, switches flip at weird times.
It's sports
for different
really.
Players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Rodrigo Blankenship is still, I mean, yeah, it's hard to find a kicker much better than him. And you saw what he did Saturday.
Yeah.
I mean, Tiger Woods lost tournaments in his heyday. Not many, but he lost a few.
Not many in the majors.
And now here's the Nationals in the World Series, which will start next week. The other side of the coin is Houston gets another great performance from Gerrit Cole. 7 strikeouts, no runs allowed, and the Astros beat the Yankees 4-1. They're up 2-1 as they get one win there in Yankee Stadium, guaranteeing the series at least goes back to Houston. They almost pitched last night. The Yankees did, hoping for a rainout today. They may get that, but they had to use their bullpen early, and it didn't pay off for them. They couldn't get any runs.
Well, you know, but Cole didn't have his best stuff. You know, you go back, he's unbeaten in his last 25 starts since late May. This is something we talked about when we gave you the lock yesterday. He really grinded yesterday and, you know, got out of that bases-loaded jam in the first, stranded 9 runners overall, but he didn't have his dominant stuff, but still on the road against his Yankee lineup, still finds a way to grind it out and get the win.
Yeah, Bob Gibson. The great Bob Gibson, Hall of Famer, in 1968 and in 3 postseason starts, had 35 strikeouts. Gerrit Cole has 32 strikeouts through 3 games. So he, not as many whiffs. He didn't strike out 15 like he did against Tampa, but he did get 7 last night and held the Yankees in bay. Really, honest to goodness, with that Astros offense, you hold them to 4 runs, you've done something, I think. And that's what the Yankees pitchers did. You know, a couple home runs and a couple, you know, walks put them in a bad space. But the Astros look like they're the better team here.
Well, I think they are the better team. I still think they're the best team in baseball. Best team in baseball doesn't always equate to winning a championship. But, you know, when you get that 2 spot for a pitcher like Cole on the road, it settles him down a little bit. And that's just a difficult spot for the Yankees. And now teams that go up and win that pivotal game 3, they go on and win the series 68% of the time. And I truly feel with a team that's still got home field here that Houston will go on and ultimately, Tuesday night, open game 1 against Browns Nationals.
You know, interesting, the headline I saw, one of the headlines I saw this morning, Yankees will regret letting Cole off the hook. I mean, you look at that line and you're like, wow, Cole's on the hook, huh? I mean, that's how good that guy is, right? That, you know, that's kind of the reaction to that game yesterday. But I guess it is.
Yeah.
No, Gregorius just missed one, too. I think it was in the 5th, too.
Yeah, 5th or 6th, right at the warning track in that short porch in right field. That would have put them up 3-2 at the time.
Do you think if Dunaway, if you sprained an ankle today, we had to fill a replacement, it would take 32 minutes for you to get somebody in here?
Well, that was crazy.
You don't
it?
Have to wear as much gear, I guess.
Are they a hockey goalie?
They do. They suit up. I know that. They suit up now. The concussion for the umpire, I just wonder back in the day before they had the quality mask now, how many umpires – really suffered back in the day.
You okay? Jello.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if you guys, which series was it? Was it, I can't remember if it was the Dodger series, the Brewer series, where the umpire took the one off the side of his head, and yeah. I swear his strike zone was all over the place after that.
Oh, yeah.
I mentioned it to Dunaway, and he noticed the same thing. Like, it completely changed the way, I promise
That's
you.
That's a strike.
No, Rockstar,
you're
laughing.
I haven't thrown it yet.
All of a sudden, he was Leslie Nielsen on Naked Gun. You know, he was calling everything a strike.
I will tell you this. It's funny that at the Little League ballpark where there's more yelling at the umpires than there is anywhere, you'll have 2 15-year-olds umpiring the game.
Oof.
And minor league baseball with the Barons, you've got 3. In this, we've got them down the foul lines even. It seems like we should just be able to shuffle some people around a lot quicker.
Yeah. Well, like sometimes they'll show a shot and that foul line umpire is literally 15 feet behind the first base umpire.
Oh, yeah. Who you got to be?
Well, I know, but it's like I think maybe we're a little overkill on this. Yeah, I mean, that guy gets one call a game, maybe.
Yeah, we could let that guy have a hot dog and a soda down there and probably wouldn't impact the game much.
I mean, Davey Martinez didn't have to do much in the NLCS, but those foul line umpires do nothing.
Oh, and look, if they know their assignment the night before, those are the guys that get after
it. Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, they might have to make maybe one call a game.
What's an easier job, right field, left field lines in the postseason in Major League Baseball or NFL replay official, because they don't get as much work as the college guys do. There are things that should be replayed, I think, and that they don't throw a flag.
They're
sometimes
not even reviewing the pass interference calls. They don't even look at those anymore.
They do not. All right, so Browns team's in the World Series. The Astros have the lead on the Yankees now. That's baseball here. We'll take your phone calls throughout the show. Big move yesterday in the National Football League that we'll get to, and all your college talk, including Gus Malzahn's plan at running back, sort of, as they go to Arkansas, and news on the quarterback from South Carolina. We got football tonight. South Alabama and Troy go at 7 o'clock on ESPN2. If you're not paying attention, the Jags with one win right now. Troy down a little bit at 2-3. We'll see if Chip Lindsey can get a very important win tonight. They are heavy favorites by more than 2 touchdowns in this rivalry game in the Sun Belt Conference tonight on ESPN2. Todd Furman's with us at 7:30. Stan White talks Auburn with us at 8. And Jason Swain on the Tennessee-Alabama rivalry at 9:30. Did you see last night Greg Byrne tweeting out a little 10-second, 15-second snippet of them testing the lights at Bryant-Denny Stadium?
I did see that. Yeah.
What do y'all think initially?
It looks chaotic.
Yeah. And is the way Alabama scores now on offense might trigger something. I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure it'll be fun for the fans. I could see that be one of those experiments after a year or two it gets a little old.
It looked amazing. Well, it looked like it would have been amazing in the stands at Georgia, which is just what this is going to be like. They just got a night game before Alabama did. Ole Miss has used some form of that last year. I wonder if this is going to be like the ribbon board for a while and statues for a while where some salesman's running through the South saying, "Here, I've got this package for LED lights. Here's what you need." And everybody's going to have them.
You know, Alabama's got them now.
Yeah, Georgia and Alabama have them now. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out and how Alabama fans like it this weekend. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's 8 o'clock on Saturday night. We'll see how it goes. Real interesting, Gus Malzahn yesterday. I guess it was interesting. Where do you think he's going with this run game? He mentioned Martin and Shivers and Joyner and Miller. And then there's DJ Williams as they replace Booby Whitlow. Your gut feeling, if I asked you your gut feeling on who has the most carries when they leave Arkansas this weekend, do you have a feeling?
I'll go Cam Martin just because he's the guy that we've seen
the most of.
Yeah, but I don't think moving forward it's necessarily going to be Cam Martin.
Brown, do you have a gut on – I mean, this is such a
– But it is interesting because we're coming off a bye, and so they did have more time to get other guys more.
People want it to be DJ Williams, don't
they? They do.
That's the popular candidate.
Very popular in his recruitment.
Yeah.
Picked Auburn over a couple other SEC schools. Had the opportunity to have a great highlight reel when he was in high school. He looks the part of a guy who could be a star running back in the league.
He's got 7 touches in 5 games.
I know. That's why, I mean, and Harold Joyner's got fewer. I mean, a lot of people wanted to be him. He's got 4 touches in 5 games, 4 carries in 5 games. I mean, I'm with Lance. I think next man up is obviously Cam Martin. I don't believe, and Cam Martin has every opportunity to prove anybody wrong he wants to at this point. I don't believe Cam Martin is an SEC 3-down running back. I think he's kind of a change of pace guy. But, Lance, I don't think he's a guy that if you wanted to hand the ball to somebody 23, 24 times, it's Cam Martin. Not in the Southeastern Conference.
I don't think you can do it.
So, I mean, if it's Cam Martin that is your A guy, you're going to need a B guy that can get 12 or 14 carries. And I don't know if that's Shivers or DJ Williams or whoever.
But Cam Martin is a guy against this Arkansas defense could go 20 for close to 200. You just never know.
Yeah, he could.
I mean, Len Bowden is a guy that they knew was going to be running out of the Wildcat, and
he still went for
196.
That's right. And especially off the bye week when nobody's seen it, you can do almost anything.
Remember the
thought coming out of, as you go into this game, remember the thought coming out of the loss at Florida was, you've got to get Anthony Schwartz more touches. It'll be interesting to see how they do that.
Yeah, he had one. He had one. You need to get him more than that. But I think Lance kind of hit it, Jim. I think whoever it is in this game doesn't necessarily mean that's who it's going to be going forward. Because like Lance said, Cam Martin could get – it wouldn't shock me at all if you gave him 20 carries against Arkansas if he got 150 rush yards. And you would come out of that thinking, okay, well, that solves the problem. I don't know that it does when you get to better defenses.
That's right, and which is immediately after this when they play LSU.
Yeah, now, I tell you, on the other side, fellas, there could be some concern if Auburn goes into this game, survives by seven, and has a team total rushing yards of about 140.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you can't run on Arkansas.
If you can't run on Arkansas and you can't run out of a bye, then this could be a problem.
No, you're right. I mean, I think that will be the worst-case scenario, obviously, is if you come in and you barely scratch 150 rush yards.
I have a better feeling this is going to be one of those 250 rushing yards.
Yeah, I agree.
Big day for Auburn is what Lance is saying there. Okay, to the NFL yesterday, where you have a couple of developing stories. One in Tennessee, where Ryan Tannehill was named the starter. And Marcus Mariota, first-round draft pick, is now your QB2. He's now the backup there. So that is a big move yesterday. One you saw coming this past weekend when Tannehill replaced Marcus during the game. So that's where the Titans are going forward.
Well, and Tannehill's a guy that actually played a little bit better in the preseason, if you ask Titan fans. But still a guy that, well, yeah, he was 13 of 16 against Denver, but still couldn't find a way to get Tennessee in the end zone. So I don't think this is going to be a long-term solution by any means. I think what it does is it signals Mariota era might be over in Tennessee.
But, you know, and I was talking with a Titans fan. I had lunch with a friend of mine that's a big Titans fan yesterday, and he feels the same way, Lance. He thinks, this is a guy that grew up in Nashville, is going for years to Titans games, and he says, I'm done with the Mariota era. I'm ready to move on. But he said, you know, the only thing that frustrates me is your team knows how to move on from a quarterback situation. He's talking about my Dolphins. He said, we'll probably be good enough with Tannehill to be picking in the middle of the first round. Who are you going to get? And, you know, I mean, that's the frustrating thing when you realize it's not done while you're in the same boat. It's the frustrating thing when you realize your quarterback situation isn't working out in the NFL. There are zero easy answers.
Yeah, with this Tennessee roster, though, I don't know how many games Tannehill can win. I know he was 42 and 45 over 6-plus years with you guys. But right now, I mean, just on the surface, over the last few years, who's been the better quarterback? I think they're pretty equal.
Who?
Or at least comparable, Tannehill and Mariota.
They're about the same. Yeah, they're the same guy.
Same guy, and I think with this same roster, I think it's going to be the same result. I think it's going to be a bad Titans team.
I mean, but he was thinking like 6-10. You don't think they can go 6-10?
Yeah, maybe.
So then you're going to pick, what, probably 10th, 11th, 12th, somewhere in there?
The biggest move yesterday came, though, with the Los Angeles Rams, the team that was the NFC champions last year. They get the disgruntled Jalen Ramsey, who wanted out of Jacksonville. And I think is it 2022 or 2023 when you guys get a first-round draft pick again? The last time the Rams picked in the first round was Jared Goff in 2016. You trade away a couple of more of your first-round picks and a fourth-rounder in 2021 to get Jalen Ramsey. But if you look at the numbers, 20th in pass defense, you needed this.
There was a lot of needs, though, and I think this is a I think it's a knee-jerk reaction from the Rams. I do think that they've been eyeballing Jalen Ramsey since he demanded a trade in week two.
Boy, this sounds different than what I was expecting when I saw the text last night.
I know.
It seemed like you were really excited, thumbs up on Jalen Ramsey.
I'm excited about him, the player, but when you start to look at the Rams' problems, this is not going to necessarily win them a bunch of games. I mean, this is still, with Jalen Ramsey, best case, a 10-6 Rams team. I mean, to me, the offensive line is the biggest issue. Todd Gurley, basically, he's done. I mean, I just don't see Todd Gurley turning this thing around in 2019.
Well, I saw someone tweet last night, unless Jalen Ramsey can play running back, this isn't going to help the Rams. And then someone shot back, the Rams are seventh in the league in rush efficiency right now. So seventh, basically, it running the ball when you need to run the ball, or run the ball, whatever, however you get run efficiency, they're seventh in the league. And it's a league of passing now. So to me, defending the pass is almost as equal as throwing the pass.
Again, starts bad offensive line. Andrew Whitworth was so good last year as the 37-year-old left tackle. He's the oldest in the game. He's playing like it right now. You replace two new parts up front. Jared Goff, a guy that was overpaid, is playing like a below-average quarterback right now. Again, Todd Gurley's not even playing. There's much more bigger issues offensively to me with the Rams. I mean, you look at the Rams' defense, first 3 weeks of the season, they were pretty dominant. And I do think Jalen Ramsey's a huge pickup. You know, the unfortunate thing, you mentioned 2022. Yeah, the Rams will not select in the first round until then. This is going to catch up with them.
I know you guys have doubled down on the all-in right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you were
– And I thought last year was the all-in window, and that's why I told you
right.
guys, and I told a lot of people that – You don't win it last year, that's going to be a big problem.
But then in the offseason, you went further all in because you got more guys that you can't control long term, and now you've gone one step further all in. I mean, you're right, Lance. This is you keep shrinking your window if you're the Rams because you're not going to be drafting in the first round an awful lot.
Well, it's exciting from this perspective too, Dunaway. You get rid of Marcus Peters, who was kind of feast or famine, and I thought he was an overrated guy, and I was excited about getting him back in the day, but he got burned more than he actually was productive for the Rams. So you've got a major upgrade here with Jalen Ramsey. But again, this one player is not going to fix what's going on with the Rams.
It comes at a time where Aqib Talib is on his way to the IR. So the Rams in need back there, and we'll see what it does to them. If you're a big Saints fan, as some of you are, Alvin Kamara dealing with a high ankle sprain, he thinks he can play this week. As they battle the Bears, but there's still some question whether or not he can.
Well, there's two things to look at real quick on the NFC, though, Dunaway. I don't think there's any dominant teams, but the problem is you've got teams like the Eagles, the Packers, the Saints, the 49ers seem to be getting better, you know, over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and the Rams are getting worse. So, you know, the Rams still have an opportunity to turn it around and at least be a factor in the NFC. I'm just not seeing it right now.
Matt says the Rams are going to have some money issues starting next year. You already have $108.75 million of the 2020 cap invested in just Jared Goff, Aaron Donald, Todd Gurley, Brandon Cooks, and now Jalen Ramsey. And as he points out, that's before Ramsey wants his new contract.
Yeah, and that's coming up in 2 years.
Yeah, that's five players right there.
And three of those players are not earning their money right now.
South Carolina hosting Florida this week. Ryan Helinski's knee did practice yesterday, left the upset win over Georgia with that knee injury. It's going to be up to doctors, says Will Muschamp, but there is a chance that Helinski will play as the Gamecocks host the Gators this week. Football tonight, South Alabama and Troy, 7 o'clock on ESPN2. If you get a chance, you will check out Caleb Barker, the quarterback of Troy tonight for Chip Lindsey's Trojans. They are the heavy favorite tonight. And the Nationals punched their ticket to the World Series last night with a 7-4 win over St. Louis. And those are your headlines. As we jump back into this, there is a point in the season where you're literally at the midway point. And I try to tone down that the season is going fast when we get to week 3 or week 4. But here we are through week 7, heading into week 8, and we are at the midway point of the calendar. Not everybody plays every week. There's a couple of byes, but there are 14 weekends of college football. And we've done 7 of them. So here at the midway point, let's spend some time talking about the middies, we'll call them, the middle of the year awards, and maybe where the SEC teams are grade-wise, and maybe what we've seen to this point so far. So let's start off. If I ask you, in the SEC, your coach of the year right now, your answer on first blush would be who?
Ed Orgeron.
I think Orgeron is going to get it.
It's my guy, too. It's Ed Orgeron.
Yeah. I wanted to see what happened last weekend. And, look, I was almost as impressed with Florida having the lead in the second half with Trask playing the way he played against LSU as LSU's win, because I fully expected LSU to win that game. But Ed Orgeron to be 6-0 and to finally have this offense evolve to where it needs to be a legitimate championship contender – it's 6-0, the number 2 team in the nation. The expectation was Alabama to be 1 or 2 all year. The expectation was maybe LSU to win 10 games. So they've exceeded expectations. They are one of the best teams right now in college football, and I don't know how you couldn't give it to Orgeron.
Yeah, it's Orgeron. Number 2 for me, though. I mean, if you want – I don't even think it's an argument, but if you wanted the number 2 guy, they haven't played anybody, and they won't play anybody until the second week of November. But Barry Odom has, I think, done a really good job this year at Missouri.
Yeah, but that one of the most embarrassing losses for the SEC is Wyoming in the opener, Missouri. Missouri right now leads the East.
Yep.
And lost to Wyoming.
Yep, it was a terrible loss. But since then, they've played good football. They've gotten better. And he's doing it with this. You know, I'm very confused by this whole situation because I've read, if I understand what I read correctly, because they have appealed, the sanctions are actually on hold right now. So in theory, if they haven't received a ruling by the end of the regular season, they are eligible for postseason play in the SEC championship game in the unlikely event that they actually are the East representative. If I read that correctly.
Barry Odom would probably be three for me. Dunaway, I agree with you on the Wyoming loss. And look, the expectation for a lot of Missouri fans and a lot of people around college football based on the schedule was they were going to be 8-0. And so they haven't even lived up to the expectation for a lot of people. I do agree they've gotten better since that loss. They responded the way you want them to respond. And typically this isn't a team that wins a lot of games in September and October. They typically do their damage on the back end of the schedule. But for me, number two, right behind Orgeron, has got to be Dan Mullen.
Yeah, even I would put Dan Mullen number two, and Barry Odom would be fine at three with me. But Dan Mullen, even in the loss, had Florida looking really good, and he's doing it without his number one quarterback, though I think he's found the right guy.
And now I'll be surprised if they don't win 10 games again this year.
If I said National Coach of the Year, it's hard that it's got to be Ed Orgeron too, right? Is there somebody who's done a better job nationally than Ed Orgeron, if I said National Coach of the Year?
Paul Chryst has got to be up there.
I think he'd be up there. I mean, right now, Matt Rhule at Baylor, he's got them undefeated.
Yeah. Absolutely, he'd be in the conversation.
James Franklin would be in the conversation.
Yeah.
And again, it's so premature. I have no problem with Ed Orgeron being your guy right now. I would go Orgeron or Chryst right now. And then Ryan Day, I mean, to take over this program – following what is viewed as a legend not a lot of fronts in Urban Meyer, and to have this team, and look, I know the schedule hasn't been daunting, but they have flat out dominated everyone on that schedule, and they're sitting at 6-0.
Not to make this sound like you're listening to Baton Rouge Super Sports Station, but if I said the Broyles Award winner at the halfway point, it's hard not to go with what the passing coordinator Joe Brady has brought to that team.
Now, is he eligible?
I think it's just offensive.
I thought it was offensive or defensive coordinator.
Just coordinators.
That's where it gets tricky, and that's why I think Jim Leonard with Wisconsin or Alex Grinch would be your guy. Probably Leonard with four shutouts in six games.
Yeah,
but I feel you. Joe Brady had that title, he would be the guy.
He seems to have influenced or changed the script on his team more than anybody else. But Grinch at Oklahoma has done wonders.
Look, I know what our listeners would say because we do have a lot of SEC bias, and I get it. But would you guys not be fascinated to watch LSU or Alabama's offense against Wisconsin's defense right now just to see how legitimate this Wisconsin defense is?
I'd be happy, and we're going to see it. Is it next week that we're going to see it, Ohio State and Wisconsin? Yeah. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
Just to see a legitimate offense against that Wisconsin defense to see how they hold up. One more. If I said right now, the MVP or the Heisman Trophy winner, however you want to phrase it, the most valuable player in college football, the best player in college football right now. I saw yesterday where Joe Burrow is now the Heisman favorite at ESPN.com of Heisman voters.
I think it comes down to three guys, Brown. And, I would lean Tua right now. He did finally make a mistake, but he's got 27 touchdowns to one interception.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Through six games. I mean, he has been just unbelievable. So I would go Tua. Burrow and Jonathan Taylor would be really close, but I think Tua would be my guy right now. Maybe a lot has to do with the fact that, he didn't get his last year when Kyler did.
I mean, what's funny around is Jalen Hurts has slipped after a big win over Texas. He actually slips because of a couple of mistakes early on, and Burrow had another big win and sort of jumped up.
Hurts' last two games have just been okay for what he was doing. Now, I mean, in a vacuum, his last two games have been fine, but if you compare it to his other games, his game against Kansas and his game in the Red River were just good. They weren't great.
My point being, though, this was their first meaningful win.
Right.
And he fell out of the lead for the Heisman with their first meaningful win.
He was better on the ground than through the air. CeeDee Lamb, I mean, receivers can't win it because if a receiver's killing it, a quarterback's killing it more. So CeeDee Lamb won't win it. I think you'd have to look at him. Alabama spreads it around too much to those receivers for one of them to jump out like CeeDee Lamb does.
Yeah, Joe Klatt said that CeeDee Lamb is the best receiver in the country.
He may or may not be. I don't disagree with Klatt on that. I don't know who it is. I mean, last year the Biletnikoff went to Judy, so that award thought it was Jerry Judy. I mean, I'm not going to stand here and passionately argue against CeeDee Lamb. That guy's amazing.
He is.
I mean, now, if you're going to make it a stats argument, you're going to have to look at a lot of factors because, like I said, a Judy, a Ruggs, a Smith, a Waddle, they share the ball a lot. And CeeDee Lamb's going to get a lot more targets than those guys. So it's going to become a difficult argument. But CeeDee Lamb's a great player.
Mike's on a cell phone. In our next segment, we'll talk about where the grades are in the SEC and maybe the best game we've seen so far this year before the show's over with. Mike's next. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I just want to make a quick comment. Everybody seems to overlook Saban. How many graduates did he have last year? How many went in the first, second round?
About the same every year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a yearly thing.
It's unfair, and we've talked about it before, that Saban's always going to be one of these guys that's overlooked because the expectation is to go undefeated and to win another championship.
Yeah,
so
disqualifying.
Well, no, we're not disqualifying him, but the coach of the year normally goes to the guy that's pulled the surprise.
Well, how many people you think could do what he did with the players that graduated? You think Orgeron could have done that?
No, nobody can. That's why he's the greatest coach of all time.
But I'm just saying, if you're looking at the person who's done the most this year, to me, it's got to be Saban. Either that or the guy at Wisconsin. I'll give you the guy at Wisconsin. I think he's done a really good job.
Yeah, Paul Chryst. I don't know. I just look at, you know, Nick Saban, and I'm fine. If you want to say he's coach of the year, that is fine with me. I got no problem with that. But
and he'll get a lot of votes. He'll be in the running.
I mean, the one thing you look at Orgeron, and it's not even really – most people would say Orgeron that's done this. It's Joe Brady, which is so weird to me because the guy was he quality control at New Orleans?
Offensive analyst.
Offensive analyst or whatever. So it's weird to me that one guy could change all this. But
he has.
But I mean, LSU has completely changed the way they play football from year to year. Completely.
And this is the year. You know, if LSU was 6-0 and they were winning games 17-14, we would give them no shot in November in Tuscaloosa. But based on this offense, I mean, a lot of people are saying that LSU's got a good chance of beating
them. In fact, I saw the updated line last night. I favorited this.
I mean, somebody asked me the other day. Let me tell you round four because I want to remember exactly what I said.
This is from Westgate Superbook, updated game of the year line. Alabama LSU's part of it.
I felt good about this. Now, did they give total two?
No, all I see is the number.
Okay, I said 7.5 and 66.
Westgate Superbook right now has Alabama as a 10.5-point favorite over LSU. Double-digit favorite.
I don't think I'd list it that big, but, you know, Alabama's always inflated.
They didn't give an Iron Bowl line. Normally they do. I'd like to give you that one as well, but I can't. LSU, for comparison purposes, is favored 10.5 themselves at home against Auburn.
Here's what Joe Brady did with the New Orleans Saints. He's done more for LSU. He assisted the team's offensive staff in all aspects of game preparation. That was his job description.
I mean, this guy can't be this much of a genius. You guys would agree with me on that, right?
Went to college at William & Mary. He assisted the team's offensive staff in all aspects of game preparation.
I mean, that's the most vague bio I've ever heard in the NFL. But I agree with Lance. If this guy's that good, he needs to be an offensive coordinator somewhere, Lance. He needs to cash in on this job.
Might be Vanderbilt's next head coach.
No, hey, but no joke. I mean, if he told Orgeron, hey, I'm getting offensive coordinator jobs all over, how quick would Orgeron unload Steve Ensminger, do you think?
Quickly.
Overnight.
It is 7:13. Chris says, my God, please let Joe Burrow stay the Heisman favorite, and please let LSU jump Alabama in the rankings before they play. That first college football playoff rankings comes out the Tuesday night before Alabama-LSU. And we've talked about it Monday, Brown and I did, that we would bet right now LSU would be ahead of Alabama in the college football playoff ranking.
If they don't lose to Auburn, if LSU doesn't lose to Auburn, I think when that comes out, it'll be LSU number one. I think Alabama will be number two. The one thing that would keep Alabama from being number two is Ohio State will have played Wisconsin then. And
well,
if they
Wisconsin
beat Wisconsin.
What about if Wisconsin wins
I mean,
Columbus?
Yeah, I mean, either one could jump them to number two.
Yeah, and Alabama could be in a number three slot when that first college football playoff.
How about this? If Wisconsin shuts out Ohio State on the road, they might be number one.
Okay, yeah, I'm cool with that.
When we come back, more on the midseason point, LT would like to walk us through the Southeastern Conference, where we are right now. And then Todd Furman talking about these Week 8 games. And there are some big ones out there that are interesting. Ohio State plays Friday night at Northwestern. Boy, if Northwestern can ever get good quarterback play, they could start playing better football. It has been dismal so far. But Ohio State seems to lay an egg on the road in the Big Ten every year. This is about their last chance to do that.
First down.
Which team has a better chance of making a New Year's Six Bowl, Minnesota or Baylor?
That's a tough one right there. You know, I think I'm going to go Baylor, and here's why. I think in the Big Ten, Minnesota – could be in a one-loss group with the likes of Penn State and Wisconsin, and they're going to go in front of them. I think Baylor with one loss would be in front of Texas and teams like that. So yeah. I think I'd go Baylor.
Here's why. Baylor is my answer as well, because if they finish second in the Big 12, just second in the Big 12, contractually, I think they go to the Sugar Bowl to play an SEC representative. And if Oklahoma's in the playoffs, then second place Big 12 is in the Sugar Bowl, New Year's Six Bowl, so I'll take Baylor.
Yeah, I'm going to go Baylor based on that too, Damian. But when you look at the schedules, both teams probably underdogs four times on the back end of the schedules. I think Minnesota's got the better chance of maybe navigating a 10-2, but based on what you said.
Yeah, that contract, I mean, you could easily see, I mean, we're going to throw Georgia out with the bathwater here, but Baylor, Georgia in the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, but if they played right now, I think Minnesota's a better team.
Oh, yeah, this isn't about who's a better team. I don't really know. I just think it's so top-heavy in the Big Ten.
Do you think Minnesota's better than Baylor?
I don't know if that's true.
I think Charlie Brewer's the better quarterback. He's better than Tanner Morgan.
He turned it over a lot.
Overall team is Minnesota.
Give me better quarterback, better coach all day long. I'd take Baylor. Wish they'd play each other. I'd put a stake on it.
Me too.
More disappointing start to the season up there in Tennessee, the Titans, the Volunteers, or the Commodores?
Can't believe I'm going to say Vanderbilt, because there's expectations for the Titans to maybe pull out of 10-6. There was an expectation for maybe Tennessee to go 8-4 in year 2 under Jeremy Pruitt. But based on where we are right now at this moment, for Vanderbilt to be 1-5 and losing the way they lost to UNLV, for me, it's Vanderbilt.
Listen, there was a time that the Titans – I mean, Steve McNair, Eddie George, Titans were so consistently good, but I never have any expectations for the Titans ever anymore, ever. They just seem like an 8-8 team to me every year.
They really do.
And they may be 6-10, and they may be 9-7, but they just seem like they're going to be 8-8 to me every year. That's my expectation of them. For Tennessee and Vandy, Tennessee lost to Georgia State, and Vandy lost to UNLV. Those are two horrible losses. I don't see how you can separate either one of those.
The Titans, they've scored like one touchdown in the last 19 quarters or something insane like that.
I know.
Seem to be 8-8, and I agree with you. It's like the whole state of Tennessee. Before the season, I can pencil Vanderbilt at 3-9. I can pencil Tennessee at 5-7 and the Titans at 8-8.
Yeah.
Man, and they just seem like those teams year in, year out.
And it seems like that's going to be a blanket. God bless Memphis is all I got to say. I mean, the Memphis Tigers, all of a sudden, the pride of the Volunteer State.
Third down.
More likely to happen, Joe Burrow winning the Heisman or a team not named Alabama or Clemson winning the college football playoff?
I think now the team not named Alabama or Clemson winning the national championship. There seems to be a couple other teams that could do that.
Yeah, I still find it hard to believe middle of October Joe Burrow is going to be the guy. He's got some really difficult games coming up. He's been incredible thus far. But I think there are 5 or 6 teams that have the ability to not only get to the college football playoff but to win 2 games. So I would go the team not named Alabama and Clemson.
Doesn't it feel like to you guys that of late the favorite going into November has been the guy that doesn't win it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be Burrow going into November. I think he'll be the favorite going in, so I don't think he'll win it. So – but I also don't think a team.
I saw one
number clips. That's a tough question.
I saw one stat on Sunday morning that in the last 10 years of football, the number of quarterbacks that have passed for 70% completion ratings against Florida, 3 touchdowns and 336 total yards, over 300 total yards. There's just one guy that's done that, and it's Joe Burrow.
Wow.
Against any of Florida teams the last 10 years, what he did this past night. Man. And it was sort of a
– Florida hadn't played Tua.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, they have. Well, no, they haven't. They haven't played Tua. They played Alabama.
Yeah. Would you feel good about that being twice this season if Florida makes the SEC championship?
Yeah. If they faced Alabama somehow, yes.
The only thing would be completion ratings, but 70%, I think you could get there.
You could do that.
Yeah.
Fourth down.
Which was the more shocking upset, South Carolina over Alabama back in 2010 or South Carolina over Georgia this past week?
Georgia. I mean, they were a 3-touchdown dog. That game, I remember in Columbia, Lance, I think Alabama was probably like a 7-9-point favorite.
Yeah, I think they were 13.5.
Oh, was it 13.5? Okay. Yeah. I didn't think it was that high.
It might have been 13.5. It might have been a little bit lower, Brown. I think we found that number earlier this year. But, yeah, that game was on the road. That was a good 10-win South Carolina team. This is more of a 6-6 South Carolina team. And, you know, Georgia, for a minute, we were talking one of the two or three best teams in college football. And as you mentioned, that number was even bigger than 21 on Saturday. So, for me, it was Georgia as well.
Yeah, Georgia for me. Though, nobody saw the Alabama game coming in 2010. They struggled to get out of Fayetteville that year against Arkansas, late touchdown Mark Ingram. That team was going to be beatable at some point. Nobody thought it was going to be South Carolina, but like these guys said, none of us looked at that slate this past week and said, Georgia's going to have a problem with that South Carolina
team. In fact, Georgia was in my pick three. That's how strongly I felt about it.
South Alabama at Troy tonight, 7 o'clock on ESPN2 for that game tonight. Tennessee's coming to town to play Alabama. We talk about that game with Todd Furman earlier and Jason Swain coming up later at 9:30. Here is Jeremy Pruitt on, a little tongue-in-cheek, if you will, the game plan for Tennessee coming to play Alabama as a big-time 30-plus point underdog.
You know, I was thinking about, you know, there's a high school team over in Arkansas. You know, they always onside kick, okay? They never punt, you know, because I don't know. I've never seen them play. I always hear people talk about it, you know. You know, we've really kind of considered that as our game plan. Just don't give them the ball, you know, if we can do that.
It would be much more enjoyable.
Don't give them the ball, Brown.
Yeah, please, if you just do it.
Please do it, Jeremy Pruitt. You know, Mike Leach said he's really done the math behind it. He's thought about this as a head coach because he does believe percentages. You're going to extend more drives than actually have turnovers.
Why?
But can you imagine that first possession? Tennessee's got a third or a fourth and 38 on their own 12.
Yeah, that guy punts on occasion. He doesn't never punt. I've read about his system. Like, if it's that situation, Lance, fourth and 38, he punts. But I think if it's fourth and anything less than 10 or 12, he never punts. Here's the only problem with that strategy is they've made it so hard to get an onside kick now.
They have.
Like, back in the day when you had a decent shot at, or at least a chance at an onside kick.
And you could blow people up.
Yeah, you just blow some dude up.
You actually started hearing a push from some announcers this past week in college. I forget which game it was on I was watching where they said that maybe it was an NFL game on Sunday where they said they should get to a passing play, an offensive play.
Like the Alliance of American Football did.
Yeah, like a fourth and 15 play where if you get it, you make it and get the play, you get the ball back.
Now, I kind of liked what they did. You just get the ball where it finishes up after that play and you go. I enjoyed that. That's one of the things the Alliance did right. Yeah, they didn't pay their bills. That was one of the things they did wrong.
They did wrong.
Yes.
Hey, we don't like it when the families get involved. It's easier to sit here and talk about coaches on the hot seats or coaches that don't do a good job until they bring their family in. Joe Moorhead did that this past week. Here's the Mississippi State coach who caught a lot of criticism coming out of a bye week and the performance State had in losing at Tennessee 20-10. The Mississippi State coach and his family on that trip up to Knoxville. Here's them getting the families involved.
And my wonderful wife and kids, you know, who are part of the, you know, Starkville public school system. And, you know, you talk about investment and, you know, my daughter's down on the field after the game with me. You know, she's crying, you know, because she's upset. Number one, because she understands football and, you know, what Mississippi State means to her and what it means to me. You know, and to have to stand there on the field and console your 18-year-old freshman daughter because she's crying. Not only that, because, you know, you hear a few fans, you know, she's walking down and walking out of the stadium telling her that her dad sucks. And, you know, they were right. On this date, I did suck. But, you know, that's part of it. And, you know, the support you get from your family means everything. And
well, you just got to teach the kids young, I guess, if you're in this situation. Look, it's not right that fans do this. But when your dad's making $3.5 or $4 million to coach a program, this is what comes with it. And, you know, the bottom line is he's 11-8
based on
Mississippi State's head coach.
Based on that soundbite, how old do you assume the daughter he's talking about is?
Until he said 18 in the bite, yep. I would have said 11.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, I would have said 10 or 11. Yeah. And that would be unacceptable. But when we're talking, it's still
unacceptable. No, it's still not acceptable. Yeah. But, you know, when you hear the bite, you think we're talking about, you know, we've all had young daughters. You think about that and you're like, okay, well, that is bad. She's 18. She's probably heard a lot worse than this at 18.
Probably, like, our daughters at 18, if they hear we suck, I mean, they're probably not going to like it. I don't think my daughter's going
to
cry.
I don't think so. I just,
my daughter would say, I don't listen to him. I hate sports.
And she might actually agree.
I feel like when you've brought the family into it, the heat is so ratcheted up, you're trying to somehow cool it down.
Yeah, I do too. That, to me, tells me that he really is going to look at this Rutgers job or any other of these Eastern jobs that may open up.
Well, look, I mean, if he wants his kids to be comfortable to the game, take the Rutgers job. There is not a soul that goes to those games that cares.
Yeah, I think he's going to bolt. I think Rutgers will pay him $2.5-3 million. He's an East Coast guy. He can go back there. He'll be given 3 years to go, you know, 11-33 or whatever.
It's a backwards move.
There's no way they will even consider him as their top choice.
Why would they not?
Well,
who's going to take the Rutgers job?
Greg Schiano is going to take the Rutgers
job. Well, if you could get him back, I don't think it'll be, you know, the same success he had the first time. But no. I'd do it if I were them.
Yeah, I would too. Schiano would be number one on my list. But, you know, up-and-coming hot coaching candidates are not going to take that job. You can't win at Rutgers.
You can't. No, you cannot.
You cannot.
But I think
it's an awful job.
He would run from the posse right now because the posse, I mean, the torches are out.
Yeah. Just coming off that bye week and losing to Tennessee where they are, and it's not that you lost to Tennessee. It's just the way you lost and how dysfunctional the quarterback situation looks.
Well, you think about it. He is an offensive guy, Dunaway. Last year, as good as that defense was, the offense was putrid. It's not any better this year. No.
He missed his window last year.
He lost stock with the fan base last year with that team they had.
I mean,
doing more.
Yeah, as we said, how often at Mississippi State are you going to be given the nation's number one defense, which is exactly what he had last year, and you didn't capitalize on it at all, really. So Scotty, he missed his window.
Scotty in Chattanooga is next. Hey, Scotty, how are you?
What's up, guys?
Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I have a question. We have a little argument up here. I usually go by a buddy of mine. He has a car dealership up here, and we listen to the show, and we talk about football and college. Well, we're talking about the playoffs, and I just have a question that's probably already been talked about. If LSU loses to Alabama 1 point and then wins the rest of their game and dominates everybody, they would have 4 or 5 wins over top 10 teams or top 25 teams.
Yep.
Alabama would go on to win the SEC championship.
Okay.
Could Clemson, if they're not, could Clemson be left out with a 12-0 record?
No.
No chance
Clemson is left out with a 12-0 record. It doesn't matter the fact that they've played nobody to get that 12-0 record. They've got the cachet of being your defending champion. In theory, that doesn't matter, but in reality, it does.
It does.
And a conference championship.
Yeah.
Which is used often to break ties in eye tests and resumes and all that. And unbeaten conference champions. We haven't left one of those out yet, right? Unbeaten Power 5 conference champion. We haven't left one of those out yet. So I would say even if Ohio State, Oklahoma, Clemson, and Alabama are all unbeaten, that LSU gets left out. Or if LSU beats Alabama, if LSU, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma are all unbeaten, Alabama gets left out.
If this happened, if Ohio State, it came down to Ohio State undefeated, Clemson undefeated.
I mean, that's, I just.
Yeah, but who are the other
teams? There's no way that's
going to
happen.
Make that,
yeah, who else would you have in?
Both of them are going to be ahead of whomever is filling up the other slots.
I was going to say if Oklahoma's undefeated.
SEC undefeated. I mean, you can't get enough teams in there for this to be an issue.
Because the Pac-12's already.
Yeah.
Already done.
Yeah, already lost some games.
Follow the show on Instagram @JocksRoundtable.